another guest. Now, you know, what I like about what we're doing with the show is I hope people aren't getting whiplash, because the subject matter is really, we're changing, we're shifting, you know?
Well, the good news is that that's kind of the norm on EAA Radio. The subject matter is whiplashy by nature because, you know, we can't really program all the stuff about fuels the same hour of the same day. So it's, you know, it in the past, I'll just digress for just a second. In the past, the way we used to program EAA Radio, and I'm talking about distant past, is we would send a person with an audio recorder to walk up and down the line and just ask people, so how'd you get here? What are you doing? And then they would bring the cassette back, take it from the recorder to the player, hit play, and that would be it. No editing, no nothing. So it's kind of random like that. We're just sort of honoring the past. I say we're honoring the past.
I like that. I like that. So who's our next guest?
Ken Kranz, who is a consultant in the drones and robotics practice of a business technology professional services company. I'm saying that to not name the name necessarily, so that you can go by your alter ego name if you want to. He advises the FAA as part of the FAA safety team, FAST team, and a number of special projects. And Ken's specialty, bear with me here, is the intersection of the following: innovating with drones, sharing that airspace, and the regulations that are intended to keep it all safe. That's an amazing spot to be in right now, and one that's really interesting to a lot of people.
First of all, good morning, everyone.
Hi, Ken.
So it doesn't have to be a secret. The company I work for is Cognizant Technology Solutions.
Yeah.
They are a Fortune 200, very large multinational consulting company. And I head up their, you know, drone advisory group.
It's interesting to me how we are figuring out how to fly with unmanned vehicles. We're trying to figure out how to drive with them too, quite frankly. But regulation is critical, not just technology, to making it all work.
Yeah, you know, just picture if back in the Wright brothers' days or soon after that, you were trying to get planes up in the air, but there were regulations, right, that would kind of limit what they could do. Back then, the world was theirs. They could do what they want. They could barnstorm, right? But we don't have that world, and we can't afford to have that world. With unmanned aircraft, we can't just launch them into the sky and hope for the best. So it's, you know, on the one hand, we don't want to hold back the technology, but at the same time, we do have to make sure we're good citizens in the NAS.
A simplistic question might be, well, who wins, the human piloted aircraft or the remote operated aircraft? But I don't think there's a simple answer to that, right?
No, there is a simple answer. The manned aircraft has to win. There are lives on board. So from that standpoint, that big picture standpoint, the manned aircraft has to have priority and has to win. But at the same time, the drone technology does have the promise to, in a way, to a certain extent, in a certain marketplace, get people out of danger. So we want them to succeed too, right? They just have to share the space.
For instance, crop dusting. Crop dusting has been a high-risk proposition since it was invented, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. And, you know, on the one hand, I'm not looking to put crop dusters out of business.
No.
But at the same time, it is a very dangerous operation and a very costly operation. And if you could do the same job with a drone and the drone crashes, yes, you lose a valuable piece of equipment. But you're kind of limited, you know, aside from the fact there's always people on the ground you get hurt with a lot of the missions we do, right? But whether you're, you know, protecting crop dusters or you're, you know, eliminating the need or at least reducing the number of tower climbs that you have to do a year, things like that, you know, that's a really good use case for drones.
Power line inspections.
Power line. We do a lot. We have quite a few customers and we do a lot with helping to not just get the power line inspections done and keep people on the ground, but take it to the next step, which is, you know, people go up a power line and they look at the equipment, they look for rust and things like that, they look for are things aligned. But we can do that digitally now by bringing these cameras up in the air, bringing other types of equipment up in the air, and then you also have that data, so you can remonetize that data. You might go out to look at equipment alignment on power lines, but then another group in the same company has to go out and do vegetation encroachment Well, they can use that same data all over again.
Talking about power line inspection, how much of that is being done by UAS right now?
You know, I don't have a good number. Some of the power companies out there have really gotten into this big time, and they were leading the pack. And a lot of the smaller ones are just starting to get into it. And what we're trying to bring to the table, what Cognizant brings to the table, is not so much the flying of the drones, because that's an industry all of itself. But how do you manage this data? We are creating tons of data daily, whether it's the telephony business or power lines or right-of-way inspections. We generate tremendous amounts of data.
There was a question about data security, too, that came up over where was the data going, who got to see it,
right,
and who manufactured the drone.
Right.
Has that been clarified at this point?
To a certain extent, that was a little bit overblown, but it is certainly a concern. And to be honest, that's where Cognizant really comes in, right? We are not a drone company. Right? I tell that people all the time. You know, this is just one small part of what a $17 billion company does in a year. But we are all about data, protecting data, and making sure nobody else has access to it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ken Kranz, who is a consultant with the drones and robotics practice of a technology firm, and advises the FAA on how to work towards a safe coexistence, I guess.
Mm.
Right? So let's talk about current events. You know, the regulatory environment and the advisory positions that different, alphabet agencies and such are taking, that makes its way into the news every now and then. And sometimes it lacks context, and sometimes, you know, it's hard for reporters to be out of their, area of familiarity. It's been hard for me to follow where we are right now, but what I think I heard in the last few weeks is that there was an advisory, potential advisory from an agency that implied that manned aircraft would always have to give way to a UAS, and that was, and I may have missed, I may have missed it from there. What is the current status of the regulation and the advisory positions?
Okay. So from an advisory standpoint, as you might know, I'm a member of the drone advisory team for the FAA, drone safety team.org, if you're ever looking for it. It's kind of modeled after CAST, which is the Commercial Aviation Safety Team. And the standing right now is that drones must always yield to a manned aircraft. And I don't see that changing. The question does come up, though, where if you say drones must operate below 1,000, right now it's 400 feet. Let's say it's 400 feet, right? It's not true that aircraft don't operate in that range, right?
Well, granted, helicopters are there all day, right?
That's the thing, right? Helicopters are there. They're at 1,000 feet, typically 800 feet. So at a minimum, even if you say, well, they're always up at 800 to 1,000, there's not a lot of time in between. If something is going wrong, mm-hmm. the time to react between 400 and 800 feet is not very much. So the Drone Advisory Committee had passed down, they had their conclusions, and they gave it over to the drone safety team for how is this manned, unmanned interface, can we comment on how that should be done? And so far, right now, the drone safety team has kind of pushed that back and said, you know what, that really actually does need to go to, like, academia. So somebody has, the biggest problem is that whole situational awareness, overloading pilots with too much information. Ultimately, there does have to be something. There has to be a way, something like a TCAS or something like that, to tell a pilot that, a drone has gone where it shouldn't go and do something about it. But we don't know yet.
Yeah, and the other thing people talked about was the possibility of equipping drones with a system that would see and avoid anything that was in their path. Is that technology not ready for prime time?
No, it's there, and they're coming out with it. But, I'm always thinking in terms, so I'm an engineer, right? So on the one hand, right. They need all of this ability, but things go wrong. Sensors go wrong. I mean, you don't have a pilot sitting there in the seat to say, shut off all the automation, I'm just going to fly the plane now. You don't have that. And so if a sensor goes wrong, you could have the best see and avoid, but if it can't see, you have a flyaway.
If you were to put on your prognostication hat, mm-hmm. how long will it take before this all settles out to the point where industry feels like they basically can do the things they need to do for viability?
Wow. You know, I can prognosticate. I'll absolutely be wrong. So
yeah.
it's hard to say, right? Yeah. But I think what we hope to see in the next couple of, within 2 years, and I mean, we've been saying this within 2 years, but that ability to do these beyond visual, line of flight mm-hmm. sites, to do like a whole right of way, to do like 1,000 kilometers in one shot, I think that's a right around the corner.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
It is. It is, because it speaks to the Jobys and the Black Flies, and there's a lot of products out there that want that, and
right.
and fantasize about having pilotless aircraft that actually have human beings on board or very important cargo.
Right.
I suspect will go first, but they need to be out of line of sight.
And think of the mission. Right
yeah.
now, we might fly a right of way for like a power line every couple of times a year, not because they don't need it any more than that. It's just because it's not practical to do it, too much. But if you have low-cost UAVs that can fly long distance, you could be monitoring your power lines or your right-of-way weekly.
Right? Ken Kranz is a consultant in the drones and robotics practice of a tech firm and advises the FAA on such issues. Ken, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's great to talk with you. You're listening to EAA Radio.